thing for our schools and for students in grades K through 5 in schools across the district. Part of the reason that's important is that whilst the state outlook is better, the federal funding outlook is much worse than it has been, and so we're juggling a number of competing financial pressures. In addition to the fact that there's a budgetary benefit here, there's also the compelling advantage that next year, for the first time that I can remember since we started having to make budget reductions, we will be able to say that every school in Portland Public Schools serving kids in grades K through 5 will have an arts teacher, because these funds that come through the Arts Education and Access Tax are very specifically directed to fund licensed arts teachers. That equitable offering of arts instruction is not the case at the moment. It's much more haphazard, and in some cases it's supported by private funding, and in some cases it's the result of decisions that individual school communities make about the limited staffing available to them. So all of this is to say that the school district is strongly supportive of the Arts Education and Access Tax, remains so. We support this modification that you're considering because we think that's a fair thing to do. And I'll simply end by thanking you once again for your support of schools, not only in Portland Public Schools, but in school districts across the city of Portland. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Good morning.
Hi, my name's Eric Fruits. Mayor Hales, commissioners. I'm a Portland resident. I'm chair of my neighborhood association. I'm also an adjunct professor where I teach urban economics. Last year, I petitioned the court to insert some more straightforward language in the ballot title. That was shot down by the court. Under the quirks in the laws, there's no opportunity for appeal, so some people may think that was a huge victory for this tax, and instead it was, you know, more or less the whistle got blown too soon. And I argued then, and I believe now, that this tax violates Oregon's constitutional ban on head taxes. The Constitution states plainly, in just one sentence, no poll or head tax shall be levied or collected. So I think that the city is violating this constitutional rule by just sending out notices saying that you owe a tax. That is the first step of levying. It's clear. It's unambiguous. It's as clear as saying that there's a ban on slavery in the state. We can't just call a job program a slave program or vice versa. For that reason alone, the city council should pass an emergency ordinance that just gets rid of the tax altogether. Axe the tax today. Be done. Go back to the drawing board. Get it right. While that unconstitutionality should just put an end to any further discussion of how we're going to collect the tax, I just wanted to highlight today's tweak that we're going to talk about. And this tweak really highlights just how cancerous the tax is. There's not a single part of this tax that can work. Think about it. We have a $1,000 exemption. My wife's a stay-at-home mom. She now no longer has to pay the tax, and I think she'd send her thanks if she knew about it. But her exemption comes at a very steep price to personal privacy. How is she going to prove that she's exempt? We file our taxes jointly. Our income is commingled. There's no way that you can tease her income out of our tax forms. Are you going to look at my tax forms then? She doesn't apply for SNAP or TANF, so she has no forms there. She has no W-2s. Are you going to ask for my W-2s to pull those out of the tax forms to make sure that some of that income is not hers? The other thing that's really troubling is that, remember, any money counts. And I have to now tell my wife that the gift I gave her last year for our anniversary wasn't worth $1,000. So what this is we've got, I said this in the voters pamphlet and everyone thought I was crazy. This is the biggest invasion of privacy in the history of Portland, because we are going to have a team of city bureaucrats pawing through food stamp applications, W-2s, tax forms, all so we can avoid paying a tax. Saying that this thing could be tweaked with just this little thing that you're doing today is like saying that we could have solved the Titanic problem by having one more lifeboat. You know, this is just one little lifeboat on a ship that's doomed for failure. And with that, thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is your mic on? Great. I'm pleased to follow Dr. Fruits. My name is Stephen Mark Baldwin. I'm the executive director of FAME Academy. We are Portland's fine and performing arts academy for young and older adults with developmental disabilities, and we were the 2011 City of Portland Making a Difference Award winner. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for presenting us with that award. I'm honored to share this testimony this morning with one of our amazing students at FAME,
Hi, my name is Anne-Marie Plass. I've been a member at FAME for about 7 years now, 6 years, excuse me. I take classes like choir, instrumental combo, and theater. I also enjoy doing things like performing at the zoo, going on tour, and this year's musical, which will be Bye Bye Birdie, and I star as Kim in that one.
You can't miss that, June 22nd and 23rd. It's going to be a lot of fun. So the Arts Education and Access Fund supports FAME, and it supports many other critically important arts education and access programs across the city. And first of all, this morning, we really want to thank Commissioners Fritz, Fish, and Saltzman for their support in referring this tax to the voters last summer, and to the voters of Portland who overwhelmingly approved it in November. Now, Commissioner Novick and Mayor Hales, we have faith in your support of this tax and in making the structure and collection of it continuously better. We have just a couple essential messages for you today. First, we want to remind everyone that this tax does a world of good for community members like Anne Marie.
This fund gives me access to programs that I can only get at FAME. FAME means fun, and it has given me a lot of confidence and the ability to be myself and to be challenged to do many things that I never thought I would be able to do.
Excellent. Me too. Secondly, we really support the mayor's efforts in common sense improvements to the structure and collection of the tax. Thirdly, and most importantly, this is a tax about people. This is about real people in real Portland neighborhoods, and it's about real programs and services that are delivered to underserved communities. This is not some luxury sedan benefiting only a few. It benefits everyone in Portland. And I have faith that the members of this council will protect and defend and continuously improve this critical new source of funding, but not for me or for my benefit, for Anne Marie and for the other students of FAME, for the kids studying music after school at Ethos in North Portland, for the students of our latest school in Southeast Portland and all Portland public schools, for the communities of color who see and share their stories on stage at Teatro Milagro and Portland Playhouse and many other places. They are the real beneficiaries of this fund, and they're relying on you to defend this fund and to make it better.
At FAME Academy, thank you for your time and your support of the arts tax.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Next ones, please.
And next up, Anita Yap, Kevin LaFala, and Deborah Edward.
Morning.
Good morning. My name is Kevin LaFon. I'm a violinist, music educator, and I have the honor of serving as the executive director of this country's first youth orchestra, Portland Youth Philharmonic. PYP serves 300 musicians in our community. They come from over 100 different schools from our metropolitan area, but we leverage the talent of these musicians. By doing so, we touch 30,000 people in our community each year. We change lives, not only those whose talents we nurture, but everyday Portlanders whose hearts their talents touch. Our signature outreach program is a series of free children's concerts. Each year, we invite 3rd through 8th graders to experience a performance in the Arling Schnitzer Concert Hall. Over the past 2 years, we've seen a 47% increase, a skyrocketing increase in attendance. But this year alone, we've sold out, in quotes, these 4 concerts. We've surpassed 10,000 kids coming into our city's jewel. They come from over 150 schools in our community. Clearly, there is an interest in arts education in our public school sector. But clearly, there's a need for ease of access. What will be possible for PYP with this additional arts tax funding? What would it take to double our attendance at these concerts? What would it take to bring our musicians and our conducting staff directly into the schools to even further break down any barriers that exist for access to arts? We change lives, not only those whose talents we touch, but the everyday Portlanders whose hearts their talents nurture. The Arts Education and Access Tax is good for our community because, as of November, we are now on the brink of restoring arts education in our community, and it'll help arts organizations like PYP serve our community even better. See, at PYP, we're a double recipient of this new investment. Schools receive funding to restore teaching programs, thus inspiring students to take up an instrument. Years later, they may someday win a seat in our ranks. As an arts organization, we compete for additional funding to support outreach and outreach programs which increase both depth and breadth of our programming. I'd like to thank this City Council for supporting the new dedicated fund, but let us not forget that our community has spoken with the resounding approval of 62% last November. Mayor Hales, thank you for your consideration of common sense improvements to this. I definitively support your proposal to establish an income floor of $1,000. In the words of Andrea Moon, PYP alumna, PYP isn't just about the music to me. It's about the bridging of human relationships through music. Mayor Hales, commissioners, and the citizens of this wonderful community we call Portland, together we change lives, not only those whose talents we nurture, but those whose hearts their talents touch. Thank you.
Thank you. Morning.
Good morning, Mayor and commissioners. I'm Deborah Edward. I'm the Executive Director of Business for Culture and the Arts. I really am excited to be able to help support you all thinking about making the kind of tweaks that are important to make this tax work. I thank you for supporting this at the beginning, creating a dedicated fund for arts education and access to the arts. Portland's taken a lead around the nation in finding ways to fund critical opportunities for young people to be exposed to arts. And these experiences are good for kids, they're good for community, and they're good for our economy. The research is clear that experiences with making and doing, with seeing the world from the lens of various arts experiences, using the arts to advance learning in all subject matters, this helps students be successful in school and in life. The research is clear that an arts-rich life results in better cross-cultural understanding. The research is clear that an arts-rich community results in economic prosperity and can drive people to come live here, to have employers that want to locate here, have employees that want to be here, and have visitors that want to spend their money here. The tax restores arts education to our public schools and helps RAC and arts organizations make arts activities more accessible to the public. We thank you for supporting this, which got 62% of our voters saying this is an important thing to do. We know that it's important for arts education to happen with school dollars, but the fact that Portland has said we think this is so important that we're going to make sure that it happens no matter what has been critical. And the ideas that you all are thinking about right now to tweak the system so that there's sensible improvements that make this an equitable way of collecting money and make it possible to collect the money that is what we're expecting to bring to what the voters had in mind when they passed the measure is really commendable. I support the mayor's proposal to establish the income floor of $1,000 and to continue to look at ways to make this work for everybody. And again, you're all very thoughtful, keeping the end goal in mind, and I appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
That's all.
So the ordinance will move to second reading. Then we can have council discussion and action on the resolution, of course, today. So any initial comments before we move the ordinance to second reading? Right.
I have some comments that I should have shared earlier and didn't.
Okay, sorry.
Thank you again. I'm Thomas Lane. I'm the director of the Revenue Bureau, and this is Terry Williams, our tax division manager. I referred to a report earlier that apparently was not part of your packet but was emailed to you and your staff last Friday, so I want to get that as part of the record and part of the Bureau's presentation. And then just a couple of comments. One of the folks testified regarding gift income. Gift income is no longer considered income in terms of this arts tax. We removed that by administrative rule change on March 19th. And we'll communicate that on our next mailing to Portland households. We have also changed the deadline in light of the council actions. We want to make sure that people have an opportunity to file and pay on time. And so the new deadline for the arts tax is May 15th of 2013 rather than April 15th.
Good. Glad you got that on the record. Any other questions for Thomas or Derek? Thank you very much. So the ordinance will move to second reading next week, and we'll take a roll call on the resolution, please.
Well,
okay. Unless you have questions beforehand, sorry.
Well, I would like to have a dialogue with Thomas on
okay.
the resolution.
Thomas, please.
And I should read the title also on the resolution, number 254, direct the Revenue Bureau to study the arts, education, and access income tax and bring recommendations for improvement for the 2013 tax year and beyond.
All right. Please, Commissioner Salzman.
Thanks, Mayor. Thomas, I know I've had discussions with you, and the last resolved in this resolution deals with my concern, and we've discussed this many times throughout the intergovernmental agreements around this tax. Is, you know, I'm very concerned that non-payers, you know, not have their credit histories necessarily flushed down the toilet for non-payment at, for some threshold, and that's what this resolution directs your office to come back with a recommendation to us about some minimum threshold. You know, I'm thinking maybe if you have a balance, outstanding balance of $250 or less, we're not going to turn your account over to private collection agencies. I mean, we can continue to collect those balances through the revenue office because I think you're, you know, much more above board than many private collection agencies in the tactics they use to get payment and in the way they can black mark somebody's credit history. And it's just not fair. And I think that's one of the tweaks that we have to consider. And that's where I look forward to you coming back with recommendations and whatever time we asked you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
September, I think. So.
Yeah, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay.
I think that's a very, very fair thing for the council to be looking at and to ask about. Obviously, there's a balance to be struck. If we signal that we're not serious about enforcement, then we will see a real severe drop in compliance. However, I think, you know, the questions that you're raising are good ones. We at the Revenue Bureau will not have, on a going forward basis, the resources necessary to really and truly actively pursue delinquent accounts on a multi-year basis. There are only 4.5 FTEs for the arts tax. And what we can do, though, is to make sure that we have sensible rules in place. The reality is that because this is the first year, we haven't even begun to write the internal rules. So this ask comes at a very good time that we can build that into the program going forward.
Yeah, no, I realize there's a balance to be struck. But I also feel very strongly that we don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, jeopardize sometimes people's already fragile credit histories until their balance they owe us gets over some threshold.
Right. And so let me specifically say that I agree with that.
Okay.
That we do need to set a floor and come to some agreement about what that floor is.
Okay.
If I could build on that, this is not the only tax or fee that is mandated by law. And typically, we obviously use the property tax base as the way to recover children's levy, other fees and taxes that the voters have approved. So as part of your package of recommendations to us, I'd like to have a better understanding of how the city and county currently tackle the question of delinquencies in property taxes for people that may voluntarily choose not to pay the children's levy portion or some other portion, and how we handle that collection action.
We can do that.
Thank you.
Other direction requests for the Bureau as they come back to us under this resolution?
Actually, Thomas, I would appreciate it if when you do a presentation on the possibility of not using private collection agencies, if you could say if we didn't use private collection agencies, how many additional employees you think you would need in order to assure a reasonable level of compliance.
We can do that. And, you know, let me just flag for the record here. The city does use collection agencies across a range of different programs, not only in the Revenue Bureau, but in others. We're very judicious in the use of that. We make sure that the record is very bulletproof before anything is referred. We contract with a very good firm down in Springfield, so it's right here in Oregon. I've personally done an on-site tour there and had conversations with managers of that collection agency, as well as Terry has gone down prior to the signing of the contract. So, to the extent that a collection agency can have, you know, has a reasonable approach in terms of a human approach, we do think that the collection agency we're using is one of the best.
Good to hear.
I could also just add that, you know, this comes up around the auditor's work to enforce liens, and I believe that the standing policy is not to use the foreclosure process, but to try every other means. So I think the city has a history of being sensitive to the impact of collections on both families generally and on credit history. So I think you're getting a signal. We want to see a broad range of options and understand the impact on taxpayers.
Understood.
Other direction?
Well, actually, I should mention this is a request I've already made of the Bureau, but I just want to highlight it. One option I would like us to explore in revising the tax would be to have it be a percentage of your Oregon income tax liability. And based on conversation I had with the Legislative Revenue Office, I think it would probably wind up to achieve the same amount of revenue being somewhere in the range of 1.5% of your Oregon income tax liability. So, for example, if you paid $3,000 in Oregon income taxes, you would pay $45. So that's something that Thomas has indicated the Bureau would be able to calculate, and I hope that's one of the options that we consider.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We can. We will have those conversations not only with your representatives but also with the Office of Equity. And in terms of bringing forward recommendations, we certainly could model a range of different approaches going forward. I think the most important thing for the City Council to understand is that that won't happen in one meeting. It'll be a series of meetings. We're going to be asking for whoever your staffers are to really commit to a series of meetings over a course of months so that we can make sure that all of the various trade-offs are well understood. Moving from the current structure to a new structure will have pros and cons and trade-offs, as will any decisions about how we go about enforcing and collecting the revenues and so forth. So there are a lot of players that have an interest in this conversation. And I guess my main message here is that it's not going to be a quick one, and we definitely want to have commitment from each of your offices, the same person, if you can, for each of those meetings going forward.
Good. Thank you. I believe we're ready for a roll call on the resolution.
Fritz. Thank you, Mayor Hales, for bringing forward the quick fix of the $1,000 floor, but more particularly for this resolution, which looks at a comprehensive look at what was passed by the voters and what was referred by the City Council. It's a good example of democracy in action, that the Council could have passed this tax without sending it to the voters. We chose to send it to the voters, and it was affirmed by a large majority. It was referred as an ordinance rather than as a charter amendment, so the Council now has the authority to fix parts of it, because part of the challenge with ballot measures is your choices are yes or no, or don't vote. They aren't yes, but line 64 needs some corrections. So that's what we're doing here. I don't know if it's line 64, but it's certainly looking at holistically, given that the voters do in general support this kind of tax for the purposes stated, how do we make it more workable, more fair for everybody? And so I appreciate the work that's going to be done on it, and particularly the Council's engagement in looking at what to bring back forward. I also appreciate everybody who's paid it so far in the Revenue Bureau's work to make it available online, but also available by mail and other options for payment. So thank you to those who have already paid and to the teachers who will be employed next fall. Aye.
Fish.
A few comments. First, we are, in effect, strengthening the law through this package of actions we're taking over stages, and I think it's prudent to do. I've paid the tax and actually found the online system less than user-friendly. I appreciate Thomas's and the Revenue Bureau's willingness to engage some of the, do a little further debugging. One of the things I thought was unfortunate, but I understand there was a cost issue at least at one point, was that you couldn't use a debit card. And since there's a lot of people in our community frozen out of the credit card market, by saying you can't use a debit card, you're actually presenting an obstacle for folks for whom that is the only way they can through a card and a number access funds. So I appreciate that now a debit card is permitted. Excuse me, that it is soon to be permitted, and that you're also continually debugging the page to make it as user-friendly as possible. I was proud to refer this to the voters, and pleased the voters overwhelmingly adopted it, but I just want to, Commissioner Fritz said something that I think deserves a rebuttal. And she said that, you know, we're looking forward to having teachers hired this fall and providing services. And I think it is important that we acknowledge that as long as the Article 9, Section 1A question is pending, there is a question that has been raised as to whether the city can distribute any funds to any third party until that issue has been resolved. Now, one way to address that is to move expeditiously to get a resolution. And that involves making sure the question is decided in the right forum and it's done as quickly as possible. But the companion question is if there is, and I understand we have our view of our legal position, which we're not going to discuss publicly, But there is a question, and I want to put it on the record, that if the legal issue has not been resolved, the city actually may not have the luxury of distributing the funds, and that may end up deferring the hiring of teachers and the distributing of, and I my own sense of the council is that if we are liable for returning 100% of the tax proceeds in the unlikely event that we lose the constitutional case, then it is highly unlikely that the council will authorize a distribution to anybody until that issue has been resolved. This is a legal fight that a citizen has the right to bring, and the courts are the place we decide this, but I want to make sure people's expectations are in line with reality, because it may end up being something we simply cannot do until that question is decided. Today, however, we're doing a fix which I think strengthens the law, and we're authorizing a process to look at some other fixes, and I appreciate the good work of the Bureau. Aye.
Salzman.
Well, I appreciate the mayor bringing forward the $1,000 threshold, which we'll vote on next week, but also this resolution, which does direct further refinements to the arts tax as we uncover glitches. And there's no doubt going to be glitches that we're going to uncover, and that's why it's good we have the flexibility to make these changes, because it is an ordinance. However, you know, the emphasis should be right now on getting as many taxpayers out there aware of this and their obligation to pay and try to get to our revenue goal. I continue to be concerned about making sure that we keep our administrative expenses at 5% or less. That's a very important covenant with the voters, and we need to make sure we live up to that. So with those comments, I'm pleased to vote aye.
Novick.
Although I appreciated the previous council's commitment to supporting arts education and the arts in general, I oppose this tax on the grounds that I do not think we should have something that calls itself an income tax, where somebody who makes $1 billion a year pays the same amount as somebody who makes $30,000 a year. So as a representative of the distinct minority of Portlanders who oppose this tax, I want to thank you very, very much, Mr. Mayor, for asking the Office of Revenue and the Office of Equity to take a look and see if we could possibly make this tax more equitable. So thank you. And with that, I vote aye.
Hales.
Well, the people of the city of Portland have spoken. We support the arts, and we support an excellent public education for all of our kids. And that's the voters' intent behind their approval, their overwhelming approval, as has been mentioned here this morning, of this measure. And as Commissioner Fritz rightly pointed out, it was done by ordinance so that the duly elected legislative body of the city of Portland can translate that intent into good public policy and competent administration, and that's our job. So that's what we're setting about to do here, both with this first ordinance to make one common sense adjustment in how this tax works in people's lives, and then to ask our staff to come back in fairly short order, working with each of us with options for how we, again, honor that intent, but make it work effectively and fairly and legally as an ongoing program of the City of Portland and for this community. So I want to thank the Office of Management and Finance and the Revenue Bureau in particular for their work so far on this, and look forward to carrying this discussion on. In fact, it'll be by July that Thomas and his staff report back. So we won't have long to wait to look at the next set of questions, but this is a good first step. Thank you all. Aye. And we are down to the regular agenda. Long last.
Item 271, support the efforts of the Timbers Army and supporter groups to retain trademark rights to the Cascadia Cup.
There it is. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's me.
Fish?
No, it's me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
It was Dan that was the soccer fan last time. Another soccer fan.
We can't
lead
see
off.
You over the cup.
Yeah, exactly.
He's there somewhere.
And now for something completely different.
Yeah.
I was standing in the north end at the season opener for the Timbers and saw a two-stick banner that said, "Hands off our cup." So I asked my older son, who was standing with my daughter and I, what is that, and was told about the Cascadia Cup, which is now resplendent before us. And so, first of all, thank you for waiting for this item to be read. I know that members of the 107ists are very well versed in waiting for the kickoff for long periods of time, and so I appreciate your being here. And I want to read the resolution or the key parts of the resolution so that everybody knows why we're taking this action today. The Cascadia Cup was created by the supporters groups of the Portland Timbers, Seattle Sounders, and Vancouver Whitecaps in 2004 to celebrate the spirited rivalry between the teams of the Great Pacific Northwest. The cup is awarded each season, with the previous year's winner handing the cup in person to the supporter group of the team with the best head-to-head record of the teams. This two-foot-tall silver Cascadia Cup trophy was purchased by representatives of all three supporters groups and has remains in the hands of the winner of the Cascadia Cup each year. The cup is currently in the control of the Timbers Army and will likely remain in it for the foreseeable future. The Major League Soccer has applied for a Canadian trademark rights to the term Cascadia Cup in December 2012 and has stated its intent to apply for a trademark patent in the United States as well. The supporters groups, as the creators and rightful owners of the cup, are the appropriate entities to protect the Cascadia Cup's name and spirit. And the supporter groups of the three rival teams have joined together to form this Cascadia Cup Council to ensure that the trademark remains in the hands of the fans who created it. So other fans in other cities have also created fan-based competition cups, including the Rocky Mountain Cup, the Brimstone Cup, and the Heritage Cup, and are facing the same issue with MLS. Therefore, we, I hope, will resolve that we support the efforts of the Cascadia Cup Council and request that Major League Soccer respect the trademark rights of the groups represented, withdraw the application for Canadian trademark, and abstain from applying for a trademark with the U.S. Patent Office. Commissioner Fish has some additional comments before we invite our invited speaker to have some words.
Amanda, thank you, and thank you for giving me the honor of co-sponsoring this resolution with you. Commissioner Fritz has a long-standing love affair with the game of football, and I think this is just another example of that passion. proud to co-sponsor the resolution. Needless to say, we have the best fans in the MLS here in Portland, and the Cascadia Cup represents a great sportsmanlike tradition among the MLS teams and the fans. We believe very strongly that that tradition should stay with the fans themselves and not with the league. So I want to thank the Timbers Army and our Cascadia Cup partners. This perhaps will be one of the few times we'll thank our Cascadia Cup partners in any context. The fans of the Vancouver Whitecaps and the Seattle Sounders. And I'm pleased that Amanda is bringing this forward.
Thank you. And I now invite Jeremy Wright with the 107 Independent Supporters Trust Timbers Army to give us a few words.
Well, it's good to be back in front of you. Hasn't been too long. I wanted to thank you all for having us last week. And Commissioner Saltzman, there's been a great response to us from that presentation and opened up some new opportunities already. So thank you very much. As you said, I'm Jeremy Wright, Vice President of the Timbers Army, and I am the representative for the Timbers Army 107ists on the Cascadia Cup Council. It's made up of three of us who represent the three supporters groups. As Commissioner Fish alluded to, this is probably, if there's one good thing that has come out of the trademark Cascadia Cup issue, is that we now all really get along. whereas previously, there was some tension. So there's actually been a great spirit of cooperation within the Cascadia Cup supporters groups. As we have been engaged in this process with MLS since the announcement of we found out about their trademark attempts. And I am happy to report that there has been progress. The Cascadia Cup Council and Major League Soccer have engaged in a number of conversations, dueling lawyers, but the process is it's heading in the right direction. We are not agreed upon anything yet, but I am confident with your support, support of folks across the league and across the world, actually, since this thing's exploded, that we will retain our rights and there will not be a sponsor. You alluded to the Rocky Mountain Cup. What we want to avoid is what's happened out there. It's now the Subaru Rocky Mountain Cup. And we believe strongly, all three supporters groups believe strongly, that there are three original sponsors of the Cascadia Cup, and those are the three supporters groups. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Could you just tell folks why it's called the 107ists?
So the 107 Independent Supporters Trust, 107 is our ancestral home in PG Park. It's where we began with 12 people banging on pickle buckets, and it's grown since. The concept of obviously
section
now 107. And so, you know, now we encompass 16 sections in the North End, but that's where we began. The concept of Independent Supporters Trust is something that is worldwide. It's a way for fans to incorporate in a nonprofit and be able to utilize the resources of the group. And so that's why it's called 107ist.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? And anyone else signed up to testify?
No.
Okay. Well, let's take action on the resolution then, please.
Fritz.
Well, thank you again, Jeremy, for being here, and Scott Swearingen, the president of the 107 Independent Supporters Trust, for helping to write the resolution, along with Melina Malone and Tim Crail in my office. And I'm sure I will now get criticized for having city employees spend time on something which some people would consider frivolous. Every item on this agenda matters to somebody, and in this case, it matters to a lot of people. And it is a principle of participatory democracy. So it came to mind as well when you gave the presentation 2 weeks ago about the wonderful things that the supporters group in Portland is doing in our community, far beyond anything that I think ever happens in Europe with supporters group. So here, participatory democracy is the winning game plan in addition to scoring more goals than Seattle. And so I'm very proud to sponsor this resolution and to say that Timbers supporters are known for their fervent loyalty and dedication to our home team. You are integral to the Portland community. The Cascadia Cup exists because of your genius and hard work, and it must stay in your ownership. Thank you for your work. Aye.
Fish.
By the way, I just want to be very clear. We fully anticipate this cup will remain in Portland.
Absolutely.
We are talking about a trademark issue.
Yes.
and while I... I'm a little rusty on my view of federalism. It's maybe the first time that in opposition to a patent application, you can actually put in your response that it would violate a resolution of the Portland City Council. That in 250 may get you on the max, but I think it's an important principle that we're adopting. You're also doing a fundraiser, I think, this Friday at the Hollywood Theater?
Yes. Actually, it's Thursday.
Thursday, and that's for the Blissfield?
Yeah, it's Thursday, April 4th.
Excuse me.
Yes.
And you're raising money for the field that you're doing at the New Columbia.
Yes. And it's called Beating Seattle Never Gets Old. And we're having we're showing old NASL highlights and a number of things. And a lot of the players who are involved will be narrating and giving their perspective.
Thanks for all that you do. And Commissioner Fritz, thank you for bringing the resolution forward. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, as I said 2 weeks ago, you know, I really am a big fan of the Timbers and the Timbers Army and the 107ists. But I'm still working on acquiring the taste for soccer and understanding it all. And I just watched one of the World Cup trials last night, Mexico versus
awesome.
U.S. Well, I couldn't understand why it was a 0-0 game and it was regarded as such a tremendous victory for the U.S. So I think there's something called a waypoints that I need to phone up on.
We'll talk.
Okay. Anyway, I'm gaining my appreciation and understanding of the rules of the game. So, but thank you for all your good work, and let's keep this cup here in Portland. Aye.
No, Vic.
I should observe for the record that the cup is so big that it obscures my view of Mr. Wright, so I'm not actually able to judge his demeanor. But in spite of that, I have the utmost confidence in his sincerity and honesty, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Thanks.
Hales.
Well, thank you, Commissioners Fritz and Fish, for bringing this forward, and for Jeremy and all in the Timbers Army for what you're doing for our community. I hope that MLS will quickly surrender in this case, and that we won't have to have Timbers Army fans waving flags that say, don't tread on me at the next game. Thank you. Please to vote aye.
Thank you. And I will report back as we, hopefully with a resolution.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's beautiful. Keep it around.
Yeah. we have its own cage at the end.
Great. All right. Item 272, please.
272, amend Bureau of Development Service Land Use Services fee schedule to establish a fee for the new Type 1 Historic Resource Review.
Second reading and roll call.
Fritz.
Fish. Come back to her.
this is the companion action to the lightning quick development of a new Type 1 Historic Resource Review that we previously adopted. Thanks again to Dan Saltzman and the Bureau of Development Services for your great work. through an amendment that I supported last week, we have set a fee at $250. While this, what's before us does provide an opportunity for the Bureau of Development Services to come back to Council at a future date to seek to recoup any shortfall, I'm confident, based on the experience that we learned in Salem and the clear direction from this Council, that the Bureau will do everything in its power to operate within the $250 cap, streamline the process so that actually is gets us to full cost recovery. And I appreciate that in doing so, what the Council is saying is there should be an appropriate fee that encourages people to not bypass the regulatory system and that recognizes that there are homeowners within historic districts for whom this is a hardship. Thanks, everyone, for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
I had some concerns about the amendment last week, which I expressed, but since then, Commissioner Fish has assured me that everything will be okay. So based on that assurance, I vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you. I apologize for being out of order. Aye.
Hales.
Good work. Aye. Okay.
Item 273, extend a contract with Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, Inc., not to exceed $40,881 to provide for additional staffing.
Any testimony on this item?
I did not have a sign-up sheet for this one.
Come on up. Morning.
Morning again, Mayor and members of Council. I'm still Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. And I wanted to testify about this item proposing to fund two more Project Respond mental health workers riding with Portland Police. While we're not here to address the idea of the teaming up of social workers with law enforcement, we do want to raise a few concerns about this item and some of its broader implications. First and foremost is that the expansion of this program is part of the agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice around their excessive force findings regarding Portland Police and people in mental health crisis. While we cry out, what do we want, justice, and when do we want it now, and bemoan the slow pace at which change ordinarily occurs, we are concerned that many aspects of the agreement are being implemented before Judge Michael Simon has held a fairness hearing and entered the agreement into the court records. Other examples abound of the city jumping ahead to implement the plan, one of the most recent of which is the auditor circulating a job description for complaint investigators to be hired with the Independent Police Review Division. We certainly have been supportive of the idea of IPR doing its own investigations over the years, but suggested that their investigators be funded with dollars originally allocated to police internal affairs as a means to end the decades of long practice of police investigating the police. The Project Response solution similarly could benefit from community input to address concerns, and even if the Council moves forward with this, we hope to hear a stated understanding that if the judge approves changes to the agreement, the city will work to implement those changes rather than saying, we've already dealt with that, and here's how. The second concern is the now deeply disconcerting integral relationship between the service provider, Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, and the Bureau, particularly around a controversial case of an officer-involved shooting. In May 2010, officers pulled over young Keaton Otis because they thought he looked like a gangster wearing a hoodie on a warm spring day, that he didn't seem right driving a nice Toyota, which it turned out was his mother's car. Oh, did I mention that was the gang enforcement team and that Keaton Otis was African-American? Perhaps that played into the traffic stop. Anyway, as you all know, the traffic stop ended with Keaton Otis dead and 23 police bullets in him, and Officer Chris Burley being wounded by one or two, it's still unclear, bullets to his legs. Burley had been at Otis's driver's side door trying to extract him by, among other things, punching him in the face. Officer Burley is now a member of the Cascadia Board of Directors, whose chair is Felicia Otis, Keaton's mother. We did not realize that Captain Donner Henderson, who's now an assistant chief, was previously on Cascadia's board. And I'll just pause here to say that she also was involved in encouraging TriMet Transit Police to take in people by any means necessary, which could have led to the death of James Chassie, and she was never investigated for that. While there's a strong argument for the police to have a better understanding of mental health issues, it is deep concern the Bureau working its way through findings of unconstitutional practices is helping guide the area's largest mental health provider.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else? Yes.
Go Hello, members of the council. With the issue of this Cascadia mental health getting involved with police, I find it very interesting the way we have such a sharp dichotomy between law enforcement and medical care. So a person who needs medical care, for instance, invite a target into an FBI trap trial that goes on for 2 years and you get stalked by the FBI, that kind of thing, who needs rehabilitation because we have so much alcoholism and marijuana in our college system. And his parents have worked very hard, stuff like that. He's not getting treatment he needs. Whereas now we're sort of like, oh, we can fix it and we're going to put in the Cascade mental health people to work with our police. But we already know we don't even have control of our sexual harassment, the racists, the Nazis in our police force. And what I would like to really see happen is something that we're more totally integrated, where, say, someone who's a nurse who can be a politician can become very acquainted of the law. And Mr. Fish, you were legally trained. You mentioned it the last time I saw you. And I was very impressed by that. So we can have a more multidisciplinary process. And what I was very concerned about the DOJ protocol is that we just totally left out racism. The Alberta Ministerial Alliance brought the DOJ here because of racism. And why are white Portlanders afraid to admit we've got racist racial profiling on our police?
Can I just correct you on that?
Yeah.
Because we often hear that in testimony, and it's factually incorrect.
Oh.
The DOJ investigation was prompted by a request from the city.
Oh, I see.
Race was in the mix. The findings that the Department of Justice issued did not include
Well,
race.
That was merciful and kind of them.
No, but it's just factual. So I just want you to
know
the history.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for clearing that up. And then moving along back into my biomedical ethics class at Portland State University, we had these figures from OHSU, very high-profile lead psychiatrists from the State Museum who'd been on the Kip Kinkle case. Is that how you say his name? But what I found really interesting is that there seems to be a difference between mental illness and blackness. And the terms and definitions change over time. And my father grew up in an era where the Association for the Advancement of Negro Persons was the way that it was called. But if we're uncomfortable addressing these issues of racism, I think you can't say blackness is a mental illness or vice versa. And so if we don't have any accountability about why we keep killing black boys in their 20s, how do we know we're going to have adequate adjudication of who is mentally ill? I think the city council is mentally ill until you guys get some justice about what's been going on in this city. And I don't know how you feel about the concept of neurodiversity, but neurodiversity is a movement which propounds that some people previously known to be Asperger's or autistic or bipolar or any of those things have a right to have differing neurological identities. And I think we need a more futuristic understanding when we just start throwing that word around.
Thank you. Yes.
Hello again, counselors. Charles Johnson, I'll wait for this mic to go live.
There you go.
Charles Johnson, good to be back up here. I won't use the full 3 minutes. I think Mr. Handelman's concerns touched on a problem with privatized services, Cascadia. It's interesting that none of the semi-public agencies, although I don't know the funding on that, but there's a problem with the way the city sometimes is stuck with providers, whether it's when we fabricate these quasi-public entities like Transition Projects or Cascadia, and then private questionable people get on the board. So I would like the city to be mindful of that. That's also going to come up when I speak to you on upcoming item number 276, where we give $1.6 million to G4 Secure Solutions. We'll be talking about having better ways to get living wages for people doing public service. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? And this is an emergency ordinance. Roll call, please.
Fritz. This is something that we need to do regardless of the outcome of the Department of Justice settlement that's in court. It's something that we've studied, the SABRE PDX project, which was collaborating with Cascadia Behavioral Health care, looking at all of the issues relating to police, sheriff, 911, and other community services. So what this does is it establishes two more cars where there's a police officer and a social worker from Project Respond together. And they're not responding so much to emergencies as to looking to care for folks who've been identified through ongoing interactions, either with community members. Yes.
That's not how my experience.
You're welcome to come in and talk to me afterwards. That's what the purpose of this, this set of patrol cars are, is to get people in touch with services. And so it's a good thing for us to do, and I believe it's the right thing for us to do. Aye.
Fish.
The day is getting late, but I just feel compelled to make two comments. The first is to the advocates who have said somehow we're moving too quickly. I think the great irony of this, since this concept of marrying qualified mental health professionals with police officers has been a rallying cry of the community for a long time, the great irony is if we were to wait until the Department of Justice process concluded, a challenge not brought by the city but by those who want to intervene and modify the proposal, we would be accused of foot dragging and not taking this seriously. So I have to say on that argument, it takes the cake for us to be criticized for moving in a responsible and expeditious manner on something for which there is no community disagreement about marrying healthcare professionals with police officers. The second thing is, I actually am going to dissent for a moment with the concept, because I think the flaw of the Department of Justice settlement is there's too much money invested downstream and not enough money invested upstream. And I believe the flaw in the concept is it is premised on the idea that when we solve the problem by addressing training at the street level with police officers, marrying with professionals to deal with the problem there, and I think there's insufficient focus and attention on the upstream investments and mechanisms to prevent interactions between people experiencing mental illness and the police to begin with. And it is not only more cost-effective, it is a more rational system to go upstream than to just manage the downstream components. But you could say that about almost every policy that we have addressing safety net concerns. That would be my criticism of the overall DOJ framework. But on this one, it actually is somewhat galling to have someone testify that in moving expeditiously and responsibly, we are somehow doing something inconsistent with the spirit of the DOJ settlement. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Good time to do the right thing. Aye. Item 274.
274, create a local improvement district to construct street, sidewalk, and stormwater improvements in the Northeast 52nd Avenue and Alberta Street Local Improvement District.
Morning, Andrew.
Good afternoon. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. We received no remonstrances against LID formation.
Okay. Any questions?
Just remind me, this is in connection with the planned new park?
Yes.
And what was, you said you were going to have discussions with some of the other property owners. Does that happen later, or?
Yes, Commissioner, that happened during the design process when we'll show them what we're planning to design, and also at that time, if they want to improve their own frontages at the time, then we'll entertain those discussions.
So the current LID is as proposed before with only the park property?
Correct. It's consistent with the resolution, and any participation financially by the property owners will be strictly voluntary.
And will that come back to council, or do they just tell you that they want to be in?
The ordinance provides the authority for the local improvement district administrator and the city engineer to enter into agreements and design respectively for any frontage improvements that may be contemplated.
Great. Thank you. This is an interesting pilot project.
Okay. Thank you. It moves to second reading. Item 275.
Increased contract with Carlton Hart Architecture, PC, by an additional $13,340 to provide additional architectural and engineering services for the police facility's roof replacement project.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I'm Michael Rasik. I'm a project manager for Office of Management and Finance. So this this amendment is for extending construction services for a project that's already begun. This is for the replacement of the North Precinct roof on Martin Luther King Boulevard. When this project was originally started, the intention of the project was to replace the North Precinct and the St. John's Training Center all at the same time. And there'd be one set of construction meetings for both projects. However, as after contracting took place, the roofing season was quickly ending. So it was decided to start the North Precinct roof this year, and they could postpone the St. John's project until next summer. By doing that, that separated the two projects and created more meetings and created more paperwork for the two projects. It was also decided so we began the North Precinct and Walnut Park project, and this amendment is to extend architectural services for breaking the project into two construction seasons.
Okay, good. Well, thanks for that explanation.
Yeah,
other questions?
The ordinance says that the cost of $13,340 is included in the budget for the Union Station Facility Improvement Project. Yeah, it does. So I'm wondering, is that an error?
Maybe an error.
Might be an error,
H1
yeah.
of 2?
Yeah.
So we'll need to get that amended before we vote on the emergency ordinance.
Oh.
It's number 5, section 1.
That's a typo. Yeah.
Well, okay. Which budget is it included in?
This Union Station has nothing to do with this project.
That's kind of what I was gathering from reading the rest of the information. So where is the money coming from?
Project budget, I assume.
The project budget, yeah.
Yeah.
But which line item in transportation's budget? Or is it transportation's budget or police budget?
This would be the police budget, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would need some information from the budget office or the police bureau as to which fund it's coming from.
It's OMF. We're going to have to bring it back, I think, because it's got a factual error in it.
Okay.
So
sorry, I didn't notice it.
No, I didn't either. I didn't see that either. So we're going to set this over for a week, unless anybody has a suggestion for how we can fix it more quickly.
Robert Key of Facility Services. We'll have to make the change. It's actually from the major maintenance reserve for that location, which is part of the police major maintenance for their facility. So it was apparently a cut-and-paste issue where somebody copied the wrong piece there.
Well, wait a minute. I may have a fancy footwork suggestion myself. These are simply council findings, right? Can't the council amend the findings on the spot?
Yeah. Could you have an amendment you could offer for Section 5 as to the fee for the additional services listed above is $13,340 and is included in the budget for?
It is included in the police major maintenance facilities budget.
Police major maintenance facilities budget. I move that amendment.
Second.
Roll call on the amendment.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman. Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call on the emergency ordinance as amended.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman. Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Thank you. Item 276.
Amend contract with G4S Secure Solutions USA to renew contract and increase contract by $1,625,676 to provide for uniformed security officers services.
Good morning.
Afternoon now. Yeah.
Robert Key to Facility Services, OMF. Here today to, first off, we have two items on the agenda, and due to an issue we had in processing, they're a little bit out of order. I want to go over both of them briefly so that you understand the differences. 276, which we're looking at now, is actually a one-year extension of funding for the existing contractor, G4S, for security services for the city. Item 278, which will be coming up in a few minutes, is simply a $200,000 amendment to finish off this year's contract with them, which expires at the end of this month. So with that clarification, I'd like to go in. The city looks to provide continuity and security services by extending the current contractor's funding for this contract for one more year. Security service provides a vital role in protecting the city's employees, visitors, parks, buildings, fleet, treatment plant, and infrastructure. Continuity and stability in the security team helps to achieve the overall professionalism and effectiveness of the security program. G4S has performed exceptionally well and has continually surpassed the city's requirements for fair wage and for equal opportunity employment. on the fair wage. They actually exceed the amount that the city requires in most cases. They offer 100% of their employees their health benefit plan, and they do have a participation rate of about 24% in that health plan. The original contract was first awarded in 2006 through a competitive process, and the original contract included language that allowed for up to 5 years. At the end of that contract term, we recommended a continuation of that contract for an additional 4 years at 1-year intervals, where we come forward to council each year. Today, we're requesting funds to su-